podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. We're so excited you decided to join us. Before we jump in today, go down, leave a review in iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. We do love those and they help a ton. They do. That's a free way of kind of helping us out. Another way of helping us out is to help our sponsors. So first of all, Dr. Dish, if you're thinking of getting a team that wants to shoot the ball better and consistently put that round ball into that cylinder, check out Dr. Dish. Mention Coach Unplugged, they'll give you $350 off. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. If you're looking for a one-stop shop, if you're looking to become a better basketball coach, if you're looking for a mentor, if you're looking to talk to me on a regular basis, right, James? Then you can become a teachhoops.com member and I'll put you on the bat phone and we'll take care of your specific needs. So come over and check us out at teachhoops.com. Let's head off to the podcast.
So Coach, okay, so I'm going to, is it Lammy? How do you say your last
name? Yes, Lammy.
Lammy, ooh, good.
Yes.
That was good.
Thanks. Yeah, you hit it on the mark.
That's very rarely do I do that. I mean, the first day of school, I teach statistics, and so, like, I'm in heaven with all the stats that are going on right now. But I have the kids pronounce their names first all the way around so I can hear it, and I didn't have Coach do that. But Coach, I'm going to have you introduce yourself, kind of tell your basketball journey to all the listeners, and then we're going to talk about a couple topics, and we'll dive in and see where this crazy thing takes us. But
sure.
Okay, hey, go ahead. It's all yours.
My name's Steve Lammy. I'm the head basketball coach at Grove City College, which is it's a small Christian college in Western Pennsylvania. And
What's the biggest city close to it? So I can put
An hour north of Pittsburgh. Exactly. Just okay. Right up the interstate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's not bad. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, I was trying to think if my son looked at any schools in Pennsylvania. I know my brother has a place in New Hampshire. So we drive.
Yeah. We're right off of Route 80. So
yeah.
Really easy to get to.
Okay. So, okay. Mm-hmm. And how old is that school?
1876.
1876.
So we've been blessed and have not lost our roots. You know, it's a high academic Christian school. Always has been, always, hopefully always will be.
Well, hopefully. Yeah. All right. Yeah. And how did you get there? Where did you start?
Yeah. You know, I graduated from Grove City back in the mid 80s.
Okay.
And I got a teaching certificate while I was here. And so my first job was in the middle of the state, a town called Lebanon. And I was the freshman basketball coach there, and I taught biology. So I did that for 4 years, and then
everybody should be a freshman coach at some point in their lives.
Amen.
You know, to God, I was talking to a coach. I don't remember who it was, and I've done so many of these in the last couple of weeks. But it's like it teaches you a couple things. It teaches you the beginning of the sport. It teaches you keeping track of things. It teaches you you need to coach from the center of the court.
That's a great point, Steve.
Isn't it?
And I had to make up my own lesson plans and my own practice plans. And so
You're just thrown into the
really
wolves.
Fortunate.
You are quote unquote a head. What I tell people when you're a freshman coach, you're a head coach. And they go, what do you mean? I go, you are running that freshman team. Like the varsity coach is going to tell you some, he's not watching you every day and at practice every day. It's your team. You know, he's going to maybe tell you, I mean, I would tell my freshmen to do, you know, play man, do these kind of things, but I'm not watching them. It's like I said, it's not like you're a varsity assistant. You're running a team, and that's a great thing, I think. But
yeah.
And you did that for how long?
I did that for 4 years, and then I got a break, and I was hired as a graduate assistant coach at Kent State University over in Ohio.
Okay, yep.
And was there for 2 years. But instead of staying in the college ranks, I wanted to go back and teach and coach the high school. So I did that for 3 years. And then my head coach at Grove City College, his name is John Barr, was in need of an assistant. And so I became his assistant for $10,000. I had to live in the dormitory.
what year was that?
That was in 1994.
Where's your vow of poverty right there, baby?
Yeah, well, I had no debt and I was not married.
Okay.
And I lived in the dorm and I taught some biology laboratories.
Okay.
But when he retired 4 years later, I was elevated to the head coaching position. That was in 1998.
Okay.
So I've been at Grove City ever since.
So a couple questions before we dive into some of your topics. What is the easiest part of recruiting for your school? And what's the hardest part of recruiting for your school?
Yeah, that's a great question. The easy part is we're such a niche school,
right,
that
yeah,
we're going to a part of the population is going to be eliminated just because of academics.
Right.
And another part of the population is going to be eliminated because they don't want a faith-based school.
Right.
So we know who we can target kids right off the bat by just asking a couple questions early in the process.
Right. I think sometimes I was talking to a college coach. I think sometimes it's easier for schools like that. Like,
yes,
like the league my son's going to with Middlebury, there's only a percentage of the kids that can get into those schools, period.
Yeah.
So you're eliminating 98% of the general population that plays basketball and that are mm-hmm. male. And then you're only dealing with the two. So, and now you're probably even niching down more, like academic and mm-hmm. Christian based. Or
yes,
that's awesome. Okay,
so that's the easy part, but the difficult part is, well, of late, over the last, I would say 10 years, it's the finances, where a young man, a family has to pay for college, and our costs have slowly risen over that time.
Right.
And up until this year, the financial aid has gone down. And so we have to sell, and we do have a good product here, but it's hard to sell to people that obviously, I mean, they want a good education, but they don't want to pay for it.
They don't want to be 200. Yeah, I know. That's why I was so happy my son got into Middlebury, because they're a need blind school.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted him. He got in, and then they gave us the financial aid based on what we make and what we can afford. It was perfect. It was like mm-hmm. cheaper than sending him to UW-Madison.
That's fantastic.
I know. So that's a wonderful thing. But a lot of schools are not that way.
No,
it's like,
and I think that schools like Middlebury, because they're so good academically, and we are too, but we have a different niche. Because both schools stand for something, they're going to survive this crisis.
I think so,
some
too.
Schools
I
that
think
are
so
just.
Too. I think there's going to be a lot of schools the size of your school that are not going to come out of the other end of this.
I agree.
Or they're going to hang on for a year.
Yeah.
And then people are going, I'm not paying that price to go online. That is the issue. I think the ones that are, I mean, this is a nursing school. If you want to go here, it's a small school, blah, blah, blah. And you want to become. Those are the kind of schools that I think are going to make it. I think actually some of the big universities are going to, the states are going to have to come in and help them out.
Yeah. And I think they will. I think they will come in. I think there's going to be a bailout in higher education. I don't know how much.
Right. Because I'm the stats teacher. There's no way you're putting 40,000 kids into UW-Madison, UW-Wisconsin. There's no way. You're not going to, they're not going to social distance. I've taught that age. They're not social distancing. They might not get sick as much, but they're not going to social distance. All right. So let's jump into your topic. So first, when you said something about offensive strategy, what was that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah. Some of the mistakes that I made, and also how I learned to maybe, you know, just why run a certain offense, rather than something else.
And right.
I learned from John Barr, who was the longtime coach here at Grove City. It comes down to three things. I mean, your offensive, what you run offensively should come down to your own personnel, the personnel of your opponents, who you have to play, you know, night in and night out, and then your ability to teach and to coach. So in my first decade here at Grove City, our talent was comparable with everybody else in the league. In fact, over those 10 years, every league member won the league or won the conference tournament.
Okay.
And so there was a lot of parity. And we were running offenses that I would say were more popular back then. We actually ran the swing offense for a while when we had a certain clientele.
I did that too. I did that when I had the NBA kid, Coach Wesley Matthews, Bucks. And
yeah.
I ran and swing. And part of it is they were just so talented that I had to make sure they were doing what they needed to do at times. So, low down. I know you can all score.
That offense.
It's a great offense. It's a great offense. Yeah.
And our clientele changed a little bit. And so we were running the Princeton offense.
Okay.
But then in the early part of this decade, some things that were not in our control changed the competitive atmosphere. One was that we allowed four new schools to join our conference.
Okay.
All of them were basketball schools with great tradition. Okay. So that it made it tougher there. But this was also the time where our costs were rising and our financial aid was going down.
Right.
So what was happening was our talent level was staying the same, but we were seeing talent at our competitors going up.
Right.
And
wasn't a level playing field is basically.
It was not a level playing field, but we were continuing to, it was like we were playing our strength against the strength of our opponents in terms of offense.
Right.
But the strength of our opponents was stronger than our strength. And
right.
And so we were losing.
Right.
In fact, I told this.
Before you do that. So let's talk about the recruit. So you obviously recruit a specific type of player, kid, first of all, kid or student.
Yes.
No, they're not kids. They're students because they're that 18 to 22. They're students. Mm-hmm. And so you're recruiting a specific type of student, academic, faith-based, blah, blah, blah. But then
in those
10 years, were you looking for a specific type of player? Were you trying, because the swing is a very specific, were you recruiting to, like Bo Ryan, I think is one of the best coaches as far as recruiting to the type of system he plays. Mm-hmm. I think Tony Bennett's very good about that right now at Virginia. He recruits the type of players that fits his system. Were you doing that?
No, we weren't. We were just trying to get the best player to come to Grove City. And then we were adjusting the offense to the clientele that we had.
Okay.
And then as our talent, I would say it was staying steady, but everyone else's was rising. So, and I use this analogy. It's a military one. From the Revolutionary War, like the Continental Army had of farmers and peasants going against the British Redcoats, which was the best army in the world at that time.
Right.
And had the Continental Army fought the same way as the Redcoats, well, we would have lost the War of Independence.
Right. We'd be drinking tea. We'd be drinking tea at 2 p.m. You're right. Yes,
right. And, you know, keeping with that analogy, we said as a staff, we have to do things like a war analogy, asymmetric warfare.
Right.
We have to guerrilla warfare. So we have to do something different. And at the time, we had a specific type of client. We were a little bit bigger, a little bit slower. We knew that we could be good around the paint, maybe up to 15 feet. And so we came up with an offense that allowed every one of our players on that team at that time to score, not just our best, but right. everybody. We were thinking about an offense that would be difficult to guard, an offense that would also, because we were strong and physical, could maybe wear down our opponents so that they weren't as effective on their side of the floor offensively.
Right.
And then also an offense that we could teach well, and something that would fit our culture. And you're going to laugh, but we came up with the flex offense. The flex offense.
Okay.
Which is as old as you and me, Steve.
Right.
Maybe older.
Oh, yeah.
But it was the game changer for us.
It's very similar to the swing. It's very similar to the swing, just a few different.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it fit our style, and no one else was running it. It seems like, at least at the collegiate level, virtually every team is running a variant of the dribble drive offense, which is effective, right. or people wouldn't do it. But we couldn't do that because we didn't have the same talent level.
Right.
So we're doing guerrilla warfare in basketball, and our way of doing that was the flex offense.
How many teams? So, how many teams in your league?
There are 10.
There are 10. And what does everybody at most everyone runs some form of dribble drive?
Yes, I would say 8 of the 10 do. Okay. A variant of it.
So you're talking about something that I'm a firm believer in. If you're zigzagging, I'm doing something always opposite. If everyone in our league is doing this, I mean, I play more zone than I necessarily like because everyone plays man. So I'm going to play some zone because you're all playing man. You know, it's that guerrilla warfare thing. I think it's a great analogy for young coaches that are listening to this.
Steve, and I think the same way because at least on offense, no one's running the flex. And so everyone has to prepare for us a little bit differently. I mean, and you have 2 days to prepare, but and everyone knows the screens are coming. Everyone knows it's a down screen, cross screen, but you still have to guard it. And the 18th man on our squad is effective in it because we're trying to get layups.
Right.
You know, you don't have to be flashy. You don't have to have
And you're working on skill. You're working on the reads because I'm switching you probably a lot if I can.
Yes.
Or even blah, blah, blah. Well, then
right.
I know you're going to switch. So here's my reads and the switches and how am I doing that? And I'm trying to get an isolation for a guard, you know, all this kind of stuff. So there's lots of nuances. The offense looks very simple. And that's why it's a great one for youth coaches, actually, in some respects, as long as they can enter the ball because it's easy and they don't have to worry about it. But when you get to your level or my level, then the complexities of, okay, they're switching or what are we going to do here? What happens when we – there's a lot of little pieces to that offense, I think. I agree.
Yeah. Hey, and Steve, and one of the mistakes I think I was making early this decade when we weren't competitive was, well, everyone else is running this. I mean – there are videos on it. The best coaches in the nation are running it. Well, I guess I should too. But it just wasn't a fair fight. So we had to do something. You know, the old it's an overused term, but think outside the box. And our way about thinking outside the box was going way back to the 1970s.
I don't even talk about thinking outside the box. If there's that's even assuming there's a box. I want you to just think differently. That's what I always talk about because people say, you know, think there's a box we're talking in right now. And if I'm thinking, I don't even want to think that there's a box. I want you to think so far out that there's not even a box that you're thinking outside. You just think differently.
Do you think that there's peer pressure on coaches, especially young coaches, to conform to the basketball culture, especially when it comes to offense?
I think there's peer pressure. I'm just trying to think of the exact way to say it. In the last 5 or 6 weeks, there's been a lot of free clinics and things going on and all this great stuff. You know, to be a good coach for someone that's done this for a long time, you have to be you, first of all. Second of all, you got to figure something you're comfortable coaching. That was your third point, something you feel you can teach and coach. And, you know, I don't have Duke's players. Kay can do that, but, you know, I got to read what I got and then be able to teach that. So I think it's the kind of the shiny object syndrome a little bit. Like, ooh, they're doing it. You know, like Syracuse. Yeah. National title, that's 2-3 zone. Well, look at what Virginia's playing pack line. Let's play pack. I mean, they're all good, and I'm not saying you can't do them, but I think you got to find what works well for your system, your program, your community, your players. They're called lurking variables, and there's so many of them. You got to try to neutralize as many of them as you can. And you're probably able to recruit and get players that can run that kind of system. That's what Bo Ryan did at Wisconsin. That's why he went to the Final Four. He got specific players that, you know, if Duke would have called them, they'd all gone to Duke. Mm-hmm. But he got players that would fit his system and run it the way that he thought. But yeah, I think for young coaches listening, I think you just got to find something, and you'll change over time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had teams where we will outscore you. We will beat you 100. And my last state tournament team, two or three years ago, we wanted to be in the 40s because we had a great center and we were going to grind you. It's like, so I think that's what good coaches do. They you have to adjust to it. But yes, I think there's some unconscious peer pressure. I think look what they're running. I need to run that too.
And you know, I was privileged.
And you and I are old enough that we don't take that too much. Yeah.
Yeah. And I even have, and it's used against us. Like, you want to go to Grove City and run the flex?
Right.
Well, yeah, because I think there's a mindset among players that freedom is, well, I just go down there, I dribble drive, and I kick for three.
Right.
But if we define freedom, I think it's being successful, running what is good for you. So a 6'6 kid is not having much freedom when he has to break down at least a Division III, break down a kid and then kick for a three. But his freedom is, I'm gonna get big, I'm gonna post up, and I'm gonna go to work on the block.
How many kids do you normally keep on your roster?
We keep 20, which may seem like a lot, but we try to develop, and because we're heavy on bigger players, bigger, I mean taller players that can, you know, we try to play three power forwards at the same time.
Right.
Oftentimes, if they're very skilled, they may be going and playing at a Division II or NAIA school.
Right.
So those young men that we get may not be developed either in terms of skill, and oftentimes it's because, well, they were in a dribble drive situation in high school, and so they played on the backside and were just there to rebound. Or they're physically immature, and so we have to develop them. So
of the 20 maturity guys, level is crazy too. I've seen my son in the last 6 weeks, how much weight he's put on and how strong he's got, because he's going to graduate. It's like there's kids do that. That's not a perfect window of when that happens either. You know?
And we oftentimes get the late bloomers, which is okay.
Yeah.
And we can develop them we have 10 JV games that we play every
year. That's the key. I mean, I don't think 20, trust me, from the D3 games I've seen in our area, and I've watched some of my players go and play, and the couple coaches that I've talked to, I think that's part of it is a recruiting tool for the school too. They want people to play sports. They want them to come to the school. Yes. There's all sorts of stuff. So it's not a roster of 12. They're going to be bigger rosters. Yeah. I think in the D3 too.
It's almost like a farm system or a AAA system.
Yeah. And, yeah. Because the difference between an 18-year-old and a 22-year-old is a lot different than a 14 to 18. The spread is bigger, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Physically. There can so much can happen there in that stretch. All right. So you talked about you're picking the offense. What about opponents? You were talking about opponents. You had three points you were trying to make.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Our offense and our ability to the teams that we have, you know, our own talent, but we also have to look at the talent that we're playing against.
Right.
And so looking at our league, well, everyone's dribble drive. I'm not going to run that because they already have better talent to start. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do something different, just like you would when you mentioned your defense.
Yeah.
You're trying to – when they zig, you zag.
Right. Mm-hmm. And are you thinking that for your defense too against the dribble drive? If 8 of the 10 play dribble drive, then your defense must try to counter that.
Yeah, we switch everything defensively. And that's our counter to what we see.
And do you switch on make miss? You switch on left, right? You switch on
– everything.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. Mm-hmm.
And that causes.
And back in the day, we were Wisconsin Pack Line.
Right. Yeah. No, I think switching is good. We in the last couple of years have gotten to the rule of if someone scores on us three straight times, we change no matter what. We're just trying to keep their rhythm off.
I like that.
Yeah, three seemed to be the perfect.
I'm writing that down.
That's okay.
Hey, everybody. If you like the podcast, make sure you subscribe, like, leave a review, jump up and down, run around your house, whatever you need to do. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great day.
Sports Social Podcast Network.